Okay, good morning and welcome to the Wednesday, October 14th, 2009 edition of the Investigative Journal. I'm your host, Greg Szymanski. You're listening to LibertyRadioLive.com. My guest today is Cheryl Barnes. Cheryl is a mother from Ohio. Oh, excuse me, from Branson. Branson, Missouri, I believe. And she raises 14 children. And in her spare time, and I wonder how much that is. She's dedicated so much time. What a woman. When you really think about her story, she dedicates her time to a citizens watch group that watches CPS, Child Protective Services agencies all over the country, who have really invaded American homes in stormtrooper-like fashion with their clipboards and with their ridiculous authority to break up homes based on any type of just a little bit of child abuse, whether it be maybe you want to slap your children on the fanny. That's going to cause a real ruckus in today's society. It's just ridiculous. I said this a long time ago, and before I get to Cheryl, let me just mention this. That they have no business in our lives. There should not even be a Child Protective Services agency. I would prefer to have citizens responsible to take care of their families and communities to help any type of problems that are going on in families. But we've created these state agencies to do the dirty work of basically this, to basically take away parental. Parents have it quite easy. Let me say it this way. In modern society, they can just dial up a phone number, say my child is out of hand, and then they can get rid of the whole problem real quickly. I think it's ridiculous. You got to look at it from both sides of the coin here, and that's what's happened. We've given too much power over to the government to get into our lives, and we're seeing what happens. That's an education as well. I'll get to Cheryl in one second, but I did want to mention this, that little blurb on the news regarding the swine flu shots. I'll be damned if anybody's going to stick a needle in my arm. I've never had a flu shot in my life, and I haven't had the flu in 30 years. And I don't particularly practice the greatest health techniques either. I'm not one of these people. I'm a little bit better now. Homeopathic remedies. I try more of these, eating better, things like that. And I must say that's been happening in the last 3 or 4 years, and I feel a lot better, a lot more energy. However, regarding the flu, I like to read these home remedies, and just indulge me for a moment before I get to Cheryl. I like to read a lot of these old home remedies that farmers used to use in the old days. And my grandmother from Poland was great at this when I was a kid. She never used she never went to the drugstore and filled us up with drugs. She had all these little home remedies that she would use with natural food, herbs, and other things. And boy, we were a healthy family. I was reading the other day regarding a story that came out during a flu epidemic in this country years and years ago, and there was a rural doctor who was treating a lot of people who had the flu, and he happened to run across a family, and everyone was healthy. And so he asked the farmer, he said, what do you do? How come you're healthy and everybody else around you is sick? He said, well, listen, I think it's because I put several onions, unpeeled, in my house, and I leave them sitting on my table. And I believe that these unpeeled onions have really helped our family from getting any type of bacteria or any type of flu. So the doctor did a few tests and found out that the onion attracts a lot of this bacteria, and credited this to keeping that family healthy. So if you come into my house, you're going to see a couple onions unpeeled, and that is my way of saying to anybody who comes to my door, when they come with a swine flu shot, I'll say, you know what? Here's this onion. Go home and take this. And goodbye. That's it. Okay, back. Let's get to Cheryl Barnes. Cheryl Barnes has been with me many times, and we're here today to discuss the Alamo Ministry story. In about 2 weeks, these kids, there's 35 of them in the Tony Alamo Ministry that have been taken from their families, and they face a hearing before an unfriendly judge who is probably going to adopt these children out because the most of the parents have not held true to the case plan. Now, the case plan is kind of draconian. The case plan is unconstitutional. The case plan is geared to break up this ministry because, he says, if you don't leave your church, if you don't get a job like we tell you and leave the ministry, your livelihood, your home, you're not going to get your children back. That's where Cheryl Barnes came in. She's tried to help these families with her organization called, which is the Child Protective Services Watch Group. And I want to turn it over to you, Cheryl, and get your thoughts only 2 weeks away from these hearings coming up. How are you today? Good. What's your thoughts about it? Let's update the story, and let's see what we can do in the next 2 weeks to bring these kids back home if there's a possibility. Go ahead. What's that? Are you there? Cheryl, are you there? Hello? Okay, I've seemed to lose Cheryl Barnes. Let's see if we could call her. Cheryl, are you there? Oh, boy. We have lost Cheryl Barnes, and I'm going to try to get her back on the line. Let me see if I could email her. If there's anybody in the studio, let's see if we can get her on the line again. Cheryl, when you're there, please call me. Cheryl. Okay. I'm going to email her right now. I'm going to tell her to call back. Okay. And we'll see if we could get her on the line. Cheryl Barnes has been with me before, and she has tried to help these children and this family get back together. She's worked with the attorney, Philip Kuhn, who's filed a federal injunction to get these children back. Cheryl, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. Try to stay close to the phone. We had somehow we got cut off. But anyway, let's tell the people the truth behind these. There's two judges involved here. Judge Griffin has most of the cases, and there's another judge who has one of the cases. Tell us maybe the differences between these two judges just in their preliminary rulings.
Well, Judge Phillips did not. They were seeking for that family independent living. The child is 17, and then there's a child younger, and they were seeking independent living for both of them. And the judge refused to accept that. He said that he was going to take it under advisement and he was going to research the constitutional implications for himself, which is obviously in contrast to Judge Griffin, who granted everything that DHS had asked for in his case. We feel like Judge Phillips' actions are partly motivated by the complaints that we filed against Judge Griffin, because, as I said before, it's more of a personal attack. You know, they could be admonished or be thrown off the bench. Over those, so it would make the other judge think, well, I don't want any part of that. And so that's a good thing. That's why we were seeking more families that have Judge Griffin to continue filing those kinds of complaints.
So you filed complaints against Judge Griffin, and how is that moving along right now?
It's moving. The letters that they sent say that you're not allowed to talk about it. So.
Right. It's amazing. You know, I've never quite understood these gag orders. It's there, you know, especially in these kind of cases. We have, in effect, I don't, usually what happens in juvenile cases, and you'll hear this, everything is sealed to protect the child. But in this case, we're talking about the parents, and these are adults who, you know, have a right to speak about what's going on in abuse of the court system. Here, I think we have a plain case of a court abuse where authority has run rampant over these families, and then they tell them to keep quiet while they allow Child Protective Services to say whatever they want, correct?
Right, and that was part of the basis of the administrative complaint, is whatever the judge does do, he has to do it fairly for both sides. So that is the basis of an administrative complaint. Also, something that I think is really that the Judicial Commission will care about is DHS and CASA and everyone comes through the side door with the judge. They all walked into court together. They didn't go through security. But the parents and their attorneys have to go through security through the front door. Even if they use the restroom, they have to go outside and walk around to another door because they're not allowed to go down that hallway past the judge's office. But DHS does.
Right. So, really, in this case, you see how unfair it's been for the families. They want to railroad this thing through. The hearings are, let's get this straight so we all know what's happening. I believe on October 26th or 27th, there is going to be a hearing. Now, is this going to be for all the children, all the families, both Judge Griffin and the other judge?
It's just going to be for the four families that haven't had a permanency hearing yet.
Okay. Now, the other families have had a permanent hearing. See, I think this is, I wasn't, tell me what the ruling was on the permanent hearing for the other families.
The one father I had told you before, they gave permanent custody of his children to an out-of-state relative, even though he's the one that did have a job for 2 months and did rent an apartment, and they said that it wasn't for 6 months, so it didn't count. And the other family, they granted independent living and for his older children, and then they set the case for termination for his younger children. And the same with the third family. They granted independent living for one older child and set the case for termination for the younger children.
What does independent living mean?
It means if a child is 16 or even 15 and a half, they put them through independent living. They're teaching them to be on their own rather than ever. They never intend to give them back to their parents. They plan to keep them until they're 18, at which time they'll help pay for them to go to college or give them money for an apartment and kind of set them off on their own.
Okay. So basically, instead of allowing their parents to take care of them, they want them to be independent of their parents because the state says that it isn't a good relationship. Now, what right do they have to get into a family relationship like that? That's what I can't understand. Just tell me what you're thinking. How do these people think behind the scenes? Because you've worked on many of these cases. I don't know how many of them sleep at night.
They pitch independent living as there are a lot of benefits to these teenagers that they wouldn't get with their parents, which is true. They will get money for an apartment, money for a car, a monthly stipend to live off of. Their college will be paid for. But that should never be an incentive to take someone's child away from them. Generally, independent living does result in the end of visitation. You know, it's almost like termination of your rights because you won't see your child again unless they seek you out after they turn 18.
Yeah, and that's amazing, you know. And, you know, tell me, Cheryl, in this case right now, what is the best alternative for these parents? I mean, do we see any hope for them, the remaining parents, if they go in front of this Judge Griffin now?
I'm not sure, unless he's had a change of attitude. If he's the same judge that heard the case before, then absolutely not. What the state is seeking for these other families is termination of their rights and put their children up for adoption. And one of those is the Krantz family that you've talked about before that has six children.
Yeah, one is the Krantz family. How many children are involved now with these remaining cases?
They have six, and then another family has four. The other family, I think, has three. They're seeking independent living for his older child and termination for the younger.
Okay, we're at 13 now. Okay. And then there's one other family. So we're looking at minimum of 15 children that'll be their fate will be decided by this court on the 27th. In all your years of doing this, have you ever seen a case that is more blatant than this one in, you know, basically a case that is really just ripping the constitutional rights of parents apart?
Yes. Actually,
you've seen others.
Yes. I've actually worked on other mass removal cases, you know, even like the FLDS, that, where they had taken all their children by association. But the FLDS, you know, they at least all lived in one sort of like compound. You know, their houses were all together in a mm-hmm. gated community. These people live in various states and various neighborhoods. It's not even a collective group of houses. And they're all definitely individuals, and they raise their children according to what they think is right. And they just have the same religious views.
Yeah, and if people wonder about that, they probably think of the Alamo Ministry as a group of, they've been depicted as a cult, which is false, as a group of people living in this kind of commune, which isn't the case. We have people that live in homes in different states. All they have in common is that they work with the people at the ministry. They worship together. They educate their children in the same manner under biblical principles. And this is a great example of how they can just rip apart someone for their religious views, correct?
Right. And they actually, you know, they use the church housing as a negative, and so they say the people are controlled by the church. But what they do is they pool all their money together. Everybody works. Everyone has a job to do. And then the church just pays for their housing. The church gives them, you know, money to live off of and pays for their food. But the church also pays for the birth of all of these children, which they wouldn't do. If there was any sort of self-serving motive, they would just have them go get on Medicaid because they don't have an income. But they don't send any of them to seek state assistance. The Alamo Ministries has paid for the hospital bills and the birth of all of the children that have been born, which is a significant expense.
Yeah, and I mean, I've never seen any reason. First of all, we're missing, again, we have to make this point very clear, that throughout this whole mess, the reason that Child Protective Services is supposed to take children away from families is when there is clear-cut abuse that can be proven, which means abuse that goes over and above just a mere slap on the fanny or a mere reprimand by a parent to, you know, discipline their children. But it must go to the point where there is clear-cut abuse of a child. There has never, since the beginning of this story, been any proof by the state that there has been child abuse to that extent, either from the children's own mouths, from witnesses, from other parents in the ministry. There has never been any of this. In fact, it's completely opposite. But still, they've been able to hold them on two little threads of evidence. And that is, one, they started searching for every possible thing to hold these kids. And that tells me there's a hidden agenda. The only thing they could come up with was, one, they were educationally deprived because they weren't properly registered in the homeschool program. Well, let me tell you something. These homeschool programs today teach the very same Christian principles that have been maligned by the Vatican in our churches when you go to church on Sunday today. So a lot of these homeschooling programs, kids aren't getting the truth anyway because they have to be regulated by the state. A parent has a little bit more leeway in that they can teach what they want, and many parents do. But let's get it straight. The state tries to get their dirty little fingers into homeschool programs as well. So you're not getting, you know, if you just read the books they tell you to read in homeschooling, your kids aren't going to get an education. And I believe that most homeschooling parents stray from that. And that's how these kids either learn the truth or get an education far and above the public schools. So that's what they used. Then they said they were medically deprived because they didn't get vaccinations. Now, even in Arkansas, there's exceptions to mandatory vaccinations based on religious views. And they seemed to overlook that, didn't they?
Right. So there's also in Arkansas a philosophical objection. So you don't even have to have a religious reason if you just don't believe that it's a good idea.
Right. So really, the bottom line here is that the medical exception is bogus, because the medical reason for holding them is bogus, because there are exceptions that these parents have basically said, we don't want our kids vaccinated, like many other parents in this country don't want their kids vaccinated, especially with the swine flu vaccination, and we'll get to that in a minute. But then we look at the educational exception, and I said this a long time ago, if this judge had a heart, if he didn't have a hidden agenda, if he wasn't trying to break up this ministry, he would have just said to these parents, listen, can you please just register these kids so that we can meet these exceptions that I know are very minute, but we can get them registered quickly and, you know, get on with their lives. That's all he had to do. And we know that. And this is where the reason behind this case is something that we've talked about, and it is religious persecution based on the Alamo ministry criticizing the Vatican and the government, and that is a fact. And they're not afraid to pass out literature about that. And there is nothing wrong with that. And we've gotten to a position in this country where any type of criticism like this is going to be quashed with these hate bills they're passing now in Congress, which is basically going to stifle any kind of criticism about your government. So it sounds like Nazi Germany, and that's exactly what it is. So we better wake up. So, Cheryl, your thoughts on that? I mean, doesn't that sound to you like a way the judge could have handled this if he really wanted to stick to the regulations?
Absolutely. And the Child Protective Services tends to work the opposite of how it should be, because if they come to your door and you've actually abused your child, you're remorseful, and so you're cooperative. And if you haven't, you tend to say, you know, I didn't do anything wrong, I don't want you here, and you fight harder. And it's usually the parents that fight harder that anger the judge, and then they take their kids away from them, but then they keep giving kids back to the people that actually abuse them because they're very cooperative and do whatever's asked of them. And so in that way, it tends to work the opposite. The reason I wanted to touch on, the reason that DHS is saying they need all the kids is because since they live in church housing and they work for the church, that if Tony Alamo wanted to marry one of their daughters or beat one of their kids, they wouldn't have the resources to pack up and leave. The problem with that analogy is that child abuse or neglect has to be imminent, meaning like you can't say one day you might cross the street and get hit by a truck. It has to be about to happen right then. So if there is a child who they have testimony that is about to be married underage, that's when they can step in. They can't just make a future hypothetical that, you know, someday you might have to cross this path. On that day, they have a legal ground to intervene. They don't have that now. Also, the homeschool curriculum is a BECA. I just wanted you to know that, because a lot of Christian and even Catholic families use Abeka. So
use what now? I didn't get that.
Abeka homeschool curriculum.
Right.
That's what they use. That's what these families use, which is a real stringent curriculum, and all the children have tested at or above grade level. Nobody's tested behind. The one 17-year-old, she is a national honor student, which the state didn't turn her into in 6 months. She was obviously very smart.
Yeah, so here we have one of the kids taken from the parents as a National Honor Student, and they have the audacity to rip her, you know, away from the family. Please, we'll be back in a few minutes.
Fight the fight. We are here to equip you. Because you love the truth, LibertyRadioLive.com. FlyingEagleGold.com says don't buy the sizzle of that steak until you understand the cost. In other words, don't buy the hype being dispensed by the rare coin pitchman over the alternative media until you understand the full story. Jeffrey Bennett has been a purveyor of wealth protection, gold and silver bullion, and rare collectible coins for over 17 years. His personal experience reaches back to 1958. FlyingEagleGold.com offers the most private, non-confiscable gold and silver coinage in the world at a very competitive cost. And Jeffrey takes personal pride in putting your interests ahead of all else. You're invited to call Flying Eagle Gold at 623-327-1778. That's 623-327-1778 for the truth about protecting your wealth. Join Jeffrey Bennett each day, Monday through Friday, when he hosts right here on LibertyRadioLive.com. The program you are listening to is 100% sponsored by you, the listener, on this First Amendment Rights Media channel. You will notice that there are few commercials on this radio network. There's a good reason for that. Corporate advertising dollars come with strings that limit program content. So without your help, these programs cannot continue on satellite, internet, or our several affiliates. If you benefit by the educational law programs, we ask you to give. If you are admonished or nurtured by the Bible and ministry programs, we ask you to give. If some voice a cause that you are passionate about, we ask you to give. If you believe in any of these, we ask you to support them as you would a missionary on a continual basis, as if giving a tithe for missionary radio. These programs are not commercially viable and must be supported by those faithful to the cause of truth. Look for the button to sponsor your favorite programs at our listen and schedule pages on the internet. Then, when you subscribe, we will send you the last quarterly MP3 CD of that program immediately and continue to do so with each new quarter. We will also give you unlimited archive access to all of our programs. We're asking you to give much less than a tithe so that you may also send support directly to a particular program host, cause, and anywhere else the Spirit may lead you. Do all to the glory of our God and Creator, for His holy nation, the only kingdom that will last forever. Thank you for listening.
Okay, we are back on the Investigative Journal. My guest is Cheryl Barnes, and she has started a Citizens Watch group to try and help parents understand, parents around the country, what's going on in these state agencies that appear to be using their authority, not appear to be, but are using their authority to rip apart families. And Cheryl's documented so many cases that public outrage should have already happened. Many of these agencies should have been dismantled. But as things go in America, if it doesn't happen to you, you basically just don't get involved anymore. And that's really the downfall of this country. I did want to say one thing, a program note, before I get back to Cheryl. On Friday, I will be revisiting the Elsa Beth Baumgartner story. That's ElseBethBaumgartner. If you want to look her up, she's being held in an Ohio prison. You know the story if you've listened to my show, how she's been put there. And there's a couple interesting twists to that story that I'll be reporting on Friday. So if you want to, and we're going to try to get her husband, Joe, on. She's been sentenced to 8 years, basically for speaking out at a city council meeting. And then sending emails to a judge regarding corruption, regarding a prosecutor there who ended up putting her in jail illegally. That's a Kevin Baxter. And that's an incredible story. We've covered it here. She's now in jail for 8 years in Ohio, and we're going to revisit that story Friday. I do will have information then, so you can write Elsabeth Baumgardner. And also, I tell you this, contact the Alamo Ministries, alamoministries.com. You can write letters to Tony Alamo and communicate with him. I've sent him a couple recently that haven't gotten through, and I've decided to write under an alias maybe and send it from a different location. I don't know. But anyway, try to do that. Contact the Alamo Ministry, write Tony a letter. Okay, back to Cheryl Barnes. Cheryl, you've been doing this for a whole bunch of years. You've seen every possible abuse case of Child Protective Services imaginable, looking at it from the other side of the coin. A general question, but why do you think, and I know you must think about this, you're a mother of 14. I think the last thing you would ever do is want to put your kids in the control of a state. That's the way most people think. But why have Americans basically turned their back on their fellow Americans who are getting basically screwed over by these agencies? And why haven't the Christian, I can't understand this, the so-called Christian communities come to the rescue of the Alamo Ministry? You would think at least one church would, but I don't think anybody has. Tell us this phenomena going on.
Actually, churches are the last to really support each other because they all think that they're right and every other church is wrong. And that kind of shocked me, you know, 6 years back, but I've sort of experienced that even the FLDS in Texas, they were not supported by the LDS. They spoke out against them. And they're very similar beliefs, just they had a split over polygamy. And in any case, nobody wants to be associated. They don't want to be seen as a supporter and then be attacked next. And to really answer your question, my opinion about why people don't fight is just laziness. Because, mm-hmm. you know, a generation ago when people fought in the war and they did what they had to do for their country, they were happy to do that and they were proud to take a stand and do what was right. Our generation, even, you know, my age of people, is just lazy. You know, they just want their cable TV and they want their beer and go out to eat and have nice cars, and they just do not care about their duty and responsibility to ensuring that our country remains free and that we have a right to raise our children as we see fit.
Right. I agree with you totally. I mean, sometimes you have to look at a problem like that and you say, yes, this is the, you know, why do people act this way? Why, you know, and I see it personally too. I try to tell this story to some people who don't know anything about it, and it just goes in one ear and out the other. Then I start thinking, well, we got 2 weeks left. What can we do to help these kids? What can we do for the ministry? Can we start to get a rally together, and would that exerting pressure on this judge and the community, maybe papering the community with leaflets, showing that basically this is a violation of their constitutional rights? And then I think, you know, would it matter even if tens of thousands of people came to that courthouse? Now, in a similar case just recently, I don't know if you're aware of this, there was a rally of a Muslim family had a number of their children taken away, and then about 100 fellow Muslims rallied around this family, went and protested, and the judge released the kids back into their custody. I don't know. What do you think about that, if we organize something of that nature in Fauk, Arkansas, when this hearing comes up on the 26th or 27th?
It's hard to say with this judge. I really feel that nothing could hurt. Anything could only help, because it's pretty obvious that if he hasn't changed his position, that he's going to set them for termination, you know, based on him telling the one father that he hadn't been out for more than 2 months. That will obviously be what he will do with the other families. So nothing could make the case worse. And as far as, you know, getting people to participate, I always try to focus on showing them how it could be them, you know, how the allegations aren't outrageous, that try to relate it to something they do every day, and also that it's paid for with their money. And that's about all people seem to care about, is if it affects them.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons they've had a propaganda campaign, you know, if we look back at when this ministry was raided over a year ago, it was organized, because when the BTAF and the FBI officers came there dressed in black with AK-4, you know, with laser rifles pointed at these kids and their mothers, simultaneously, Fox News and all the big news agencies were ready for this. They were alerted to this, and they ran stories all over the country at that point, painting this ministry out to be basically a cult that needs to be disbanded. And as we called Arkansas people in Falk, you know, one by one, from real estate agencies, car dealerships, all they could mimic was what the news on Fox told them. And so even locally, where they knew these people, it didn't matter, because they listened to Fox News instead. So if you don't think people are propagandized in this country and don't really care about the other side of the story, don't even care about their neighbors, this is a classic example. You're absolutely right. So, you know, a rally wouldn't hurt. I would recommend that we try to organize something to really show support, if not for anything else, to show the support of these people. And if there's any of you out there, I mean, imagine if, let's say we have, you know, I don't know how many listeners, let's just say we even have 10 people right now who take up on what we said, and they can organize another 10 people. And for 1 or 2 days out of their life, they can just, instead of taking, you know, a fishing trip or a hunting trip or whatever, they take 2 days to go to Falk, Arkansas, and stand there together with these people, based on the fact, even though they may not have the same religious views, based on the fact that these kids have been illegally taken from their parents, and that would be a sign that they don't want it to happen to them. Now, most, you know, are you out there listening afraid to do that? Are you afraid to stick your neck out? Are you afraid to talk on the air like I am and Cheryl is? I surely am not afraid to do it. Cheryl's not afraid to do it. She's got 14 kids to take care of. Now, don't you think they know who she is? Don't you think, you know, she's had problems in the past? These people have tried to come to her door many times because of her involvement in this. They've tried to disband her agency. Cheryl,
are
you still there?
I'll tell you a little story real quick about that.
Yeah, go ahead.
When I came back from Texarkana once, I had a speeding ticket that was about a week overdue that I hadn't paid on time. And I came back from Texarkana, and I just got back from there. And at 2:30 in the morning, two cop cars came to arrest me for that speeding ticket, which absolutely never happened, like never. And they dragged me out of bed and took me to jail.
You're kidding me. On a speeding ticket.
And I know it was totally related to the alarm.
Oh, yeah. It had to be. And so you're living in Branson, Missouri, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you go to Texarkana, Texas or Arkansas. It's a town that's divided in half. And then guess what happens? They start looking at your pass. They say, "Oh, she's got a speeding ticket." So the Texarkana police call the Branson police, and the Branson police blindly listen to this. Then they probably check out your records, and because Child Protective Services harassed you, you've seen on your records that they state that you're a problem family, right?
Right.
What do they say on your records? I can't remember.
It says always notify the police. The family is extremely hostile. With
okay.
Words.
Here we have a mother of 14, and she's hostile. Oh my! You know this country. Well, let me tell you what something never fails to amaze me when we look behind the scenes what we find here. But yeah, I mean here we go. That had to be related. So they harass you, and so you went to jail. And how long did you spend there?
Not long. I had to pay like a $300 bond. But the FBI had been following us around in Texarkana and, you know, driving by the house where we stay, and they followed us to court in different places. So I know that it was related. But to ensure that it didn't happen again, I filed a complaint against both of the Branson police officers because they didn't have a copy of the warrant when they came to my door. And it's not like they had pulled me over and said, "Oh, you have a warrant, we have to arrest you." They came to my house only to arrest me, which means they had to have a copy of the warrant. And they didn't, but by taking those steps and using all the remedies available to you, it helps the Branson police next time may say, hey, you know, we don't really want to do you any favors because she's too much of a problem to deal with.
Oh, and they said that.
Well, I'm hoping that they will. I mean, that's why I filed complaints against them. You know, I can say, okay, my true enemy is Randall Harris from the FBI, but if you're standing in front of him, I'm just going to have to mow you down to get to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, amazing. So, I mean, if anything, folks, listen to this story. I mean, when I'm talking about this rally, I'm not saying this is going to help really release these kids, but at least it'll help. And this is up to everybody now. I mean, I don't know how it can be organized. Hopefully we can get, I know Cheryl together, there's a couple of people in the Alamo Ministry that can get together, but we don't have much time. And I think one thing we can rally around, and let's see if anybody out there, if everybody's five people listening that are interested, can get a copy of all the vaccination liberation groups in this country, and if you send out at least five notices to them about this story, stating there is going to be a get-together to stop these, you know, what better kids to use as poster kids for stopping mandatory vaccination than the Alamo children who have already been illegally vaccinated? Isn't this an interesting story? Tell us about the swine flu vaccinations that have happened behind the backs of the American people and the parents who do not want their kids vaccinated. Go ahead.
Right. All of the children have received at least one set of the swine flu vaccine. The girls have all received the Gardasil vaccine also. The thing about swine flu is it's not only controversial, but it's not a state-mandated vaccine. It's, you know, it's not one of the vaccines that you need to get into school. And so for them to give them that vaccine in particular really infringes upon their parental rights. And
exactly.
It can't be undone.
Exactly. And basically, you probably could file a case that there was assault and battery with intent to do great bodily harm. But what prosecutor there is going to take to prosecute the case, you know, because we send those allegations to the prosecutor, then he has to decide, you know, and you know what he's going to decide.
Well, it's like I said, if you're bowling and you only have one pin to knock down, you don't think that's very difficult. But when they stick all 10 pins there, it looks a lot harder. So
right.
You go after the people that are in the way, the people that are helping DHS, which in this case is the doctor. You can file a complaint against his medical license, and you just keep doing that one person at a time and just keep using every remedy that's available to you so that the doctors are going to say, hey, we're not going to do this unless we get a court order, or we're not going to let it fall on us because you have immunity, we don't want to participate.
Okay, here's another thing they could do. Okay, you over there listening. My listeners, file complaints if your children have been illegally vaccinated. File complaints with, find out who the doctors were. File complaints with the doctors. Good idea, Cheryl. Okay, the rally. We could, why not call these vaccination places and see if they'll get behind these kids? And that'll see if they really want this. I mean, they're saying, there's a public outcry across the country now from every one of these groups. To stop mandatory vaccine, you know, not to stop swine flu vaccinations from being mandatory. Not one has come to the aid of these people. Now let's see if we can contact them and see if they will. And what are you going to find? I'd like to find out. There's another thing we could do. Another thing past that. What else can we do? Cheryl's talked very clearly. We can file complaints with these judges that's already been done. Judicial complaints that they're not. There's a hidden agenda here going on. That can be looked into. We only have 2 weeks. I think we should try everything we can. And that's why I do this story not once, but maybe even twice, three times a week until that, to raise some type of public awareness of this. And you've got to get together, people, on this. You've got to get together and find a common ground here. I don't care whether you're a Christian, whether you're an atheist, whether you're a Baptist, whatever you are. You know, at least look at this from a standpoint of these people's rights are being violated. Their right as a free person in this country, so to speak, to worship where they choose and not to have their kids illegally vaccinated with the swine flu vaccination. That's something we can all get together on, or many millions of people can, And let's not let the government stand in our way with this BS propaganda they're spreading about this group. I do have a question from an emailer. And he says, please ask Cheryl these questions. We know that their kids' constitutional rights are being blatantly denied. Yeah, and you know what? You don't have to go to law school to know that. I mean, listen, this is amazing. And then now I'll continue with the emailer. And a righteous judicial system would have upheld their religious liberty early on in this process. So, yeah, we don't have a righteous judicial system, emailer. Now, the question is, does Cheryl believe that these families are adequately represented? And does she suspect that their attorneys are friends of the court and not the families? What's your thoughts on that? Because you know these guys pretty well. Go ahead.
I do believe that Mr. Kuhn is probably the best attorney for them in juvenile court. The two attorneys they had prior to that in the public defender were terrible. And, you know, they were just always trying to be friends with DHS, and they were always in the email loop. Mr. Kuhn's never in the email loop. They send him everything the long route, so that's always my gauge of whether or not you've got the right attorney, if he's hated by the other side. And So I want to touch on, you know, the people that think that the Alamo Ministries is wrong, or they do things wrong, or they're weird. The thing that we really should look at is the fruit. None of their kids are been pregnant as teenagers. None of them have criminal records. They're not out causing trouble. None of them smoke. All of the families are very close. Even the teenagers are very close with their parents. They respect their parents and listen to them. And no matter what you think about the religion, if you agree with it or not, there's no fruit indicating that anything wrong is happening. All the fruit is good.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly, you know, a great point, Cheryl. Look at what these kids are. Look at how they've been brought up. That's all you need to do. Now, why do you think, what does Child Protective Service, do they ever think about these things? I mean, they have families themselves, don't they?
Yes, some of them.
Yeah. I mean, I can't understand. I mean, see, the problem is that I've got noticed, you've told me this, the parents, when they come to visit their kids, aren't even allowed to really talk with them openly, bring a Bible. They're just basically cut off totally from any kind of influence that would be of a parental nature. It's ridiculous. It's just absurd what's going on.
Right, and yet they're required to sit there at a staffing with this one 17-year-old girl. The DHS, they totally went on and on about how the parents can still go to church there. All they have to do is get housing and a job, and that's all they have to do to get you back, and then we'd give you back. And then when the mother tried to say her own point of view about why they believed it was important to work together as a church, they shut her down. They didn't let her respond. Mm-hmm. So not only do they not let the parents speak with their kids openly, they're forced to sit there and endure whatever DHS has to say.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So, I mean, it's just back, you know, the whole thing is upside down and turned around to basically just rip these kids away from their family for absolutely. But, you know, the only reason they need is it's so flimsy nowadays that all they want to do is look good in the eyes of a majority of the people. So they don't really give a damn about the health of these kids. They don't really give a damn about statistics. I just read a story somebody sent me that in Los Angeles County, over 286 kids in Child Protective Services have either died of injuries, accidents, or what have you. So you're telling me that these state agencies, it's really working? No, nobody talks about the abuse after these agencies get a hold of these kids, and I think you found a lot of it, haven't you?
Yes, exactly. There's a lot, even, you know, of teen pregnancy, a lot of foster children go on to have criminal records and be in prison, and, you know, their fruit is completely the opposite. They're frequently put on birth control. They're given information about it. And it reminds me of a TV program I was watching a couple of days ago, which I don't usually watch, but it's that wife swap show. And this one woman had come to this other family, and she said, "You're too strict. Your kids are teenagers. They need freedom. They should be going out with their friends instead of home with you on a Friday night." And then back at her house, her teenager didn't come home all night and didn't call. And I was just appalled that she thinks she can come to this other family and tell them how to do things when they don't have any problems, and her kid is staying out all night. And that's exactly what you have with DHS, is their method of raising kids doesn't work. There's every indication that it doesn't work, and yet they'll come to your house and tell you how to raise your kids when you have no problems.
Yeah. It's just incredible. So, again, let me remind everybody that this hearing is coming up in Texarkana on the 26th or 27th. Also, let me remind you that Tony's sentencing hearing is coming up right around that time, I believe on the 23rd. And you can write him in jail if you contact the Alamo Ministries, and they will give you his address, and you can write him. The two stories together provide the state with a lot of propaganda ammunition to make this happen, disband the ministry, and then, like all stories in America, they go away, and then they go on to more abuse. And no better example than 9/11. That story, basically, now it's basically just old hat. Yeah, 9/11 happened, terrorism, 350 or more people, and many others died. There's so much going, you know, many of the people near New York are really sick because of the toxicity of that event. And nobody, again, really wants to look at really the causes behind it and to nail the people who were involved in it, being the complicity of the Vatican-led New World Order. Can't leave them out. And this story is going to go down in the annals of another Lincoln assassination that most people have no idea who was involved in, the Kennedy assassination, the JFK Jr. assassination. We can get Wellstone in there from Minnesota. And this can go on and on and on. And this story is another case that will, if this happens, you bet in the minds of 90% of Americans, it'll go away quite quickly. But you can have this on your conscience, that these families were destroyed. And you might as well just say it was a death in a family, because when you take kids away like this, what is it really? You know, I view it the same way. Because in the end, that's what it is. What's your thoughts?
I agree exactly. It's very hard for children to recover. They don't have the resolve, you know, that parents do, and it takes so long. And frequently for the children to get along in their foster home, they have to pretend to kind of agree with DHS, you know, to make peace with those people. And it puts them at a real internal conflict to still want to go home or try to want to go home. And they typically, as I said, end up having a lot of problems.
All right. If anybody wants to contact you that has a problem, Cheryl, and your organization can come to their help, how can they do that?
You can call me at 417-294-9955 or email me. It's Cheryl at cpswatchlegalteam.com.
Okay, and so if you want to email or call Cheryl, that's how you do it. We're all out of time, Cheryl. I want to thank you for coming on the show. And let's keep in touch, and let's see if we can get some people out there to help the Alamo people during this hearing on the 26th and 27th. Thanks, Cheryl.
Mm-hmm, thank you.
Okay, again, that was Cheryl Barnes. Listen to my rebroadcast this afternoon. You can get her email. You can get her phone number if you have any questions for her. We'll be back tomorrow. Good morning.